So hello everyone and welcome back to ED's latest Susty Talk, our long-running interview series that connects sustainable businesses with the latest advice, insight and initiatives that are driving the sustainability agenda for good. You're listening to this right now as part of ED's Business Leadership Month, a month of content dedicated to showcasing the latest trends and discussing the latest topics that can spur sustainability professionals to new heights and new ambitions. So we are just days out from our ED Awards at the time of recording this, which celebrates corporate sustainability at its best. And what better way to warm up than with some insights from one of the organisations that has supported us in putting on these awards. So for this Susty Talk, I'm joined by Stuart McLaren, Group Chief Executive Officer of Amphesis. And Amphesis are one of our platinum partners for the ED Awards for 2024. So Stuart, firstly, thank you so much for joining me today. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks, mate. Very well.
Good, good. And what I wanted to do with this chat is obviously align it to the focuses of awards, which is kind of celebrating excellence in terms of sustainability leadership. I'd love to get you and your organization's thoughts on why leadership is so important in the kind of sustainability agenda as we see it. There's a lot of kind of external pressures right now, not least in terms of the worsening climate crisis, but also cost of living crisis, societal kind of demands are shifting. So why is it so important that sustainability isn't just kind of viewed as a kind of nice to have, but leadership is important in terms of really driving corporate performance?
Yeah, the poly crisis, it tends to get summarized these days. I think you've got to look at this sort of this moment in time, this moment in history and how leadership responds to a crisis. And I suppose the way we see the world is that leaders now being forced into stepping out of the models and systems of what was the old era. So, and many of those modern systems seem to be broken. And I suppose, you know, the question that always gets asked is, well, you know, those models and systems have been broken for quite a while. We've been talking about it for years, you know, so why do leaders have to move now? And what's the difference? And I think that, you know, maybe we've just hit a tipping point. I think it's quite difficult to put your finger on one thing, but, you know, if I look at the pressures from investors, you know, decisions being made by talent, the different sort of consumer behavior that we're experiencing, but possibly in particular, the big stick of compliance is out. So this avalanche of regulation that is hitting the market. And I think it's different regulation to that we've seen, over the years. Much of that regulation is demanded a sort of incremental nudge in improvement of performance, whereas this is the big stick. It's basically saying, get out of the fortresses and strongholds, these perceived places of safety that you built for yourself and, you know, over the last 80 years. And you've got to step into the transition zone. And this transition zone is full of transformational change. And with that is risk and danger and jeopardy, but also a huge amount of opportunity for value creation. And at some point on that journey into the transition zone, you get to reimagine and redesign the models and systems of the next era, which would be quite fun. So if you see that as, you know, the transition zone and the decarbonization journey and all the kind of things that we talk about, frame up the reality that the world now needs to step out of the status quo, out of business as usual, and go on a journey. And that requires, of course, a particular type of leadership, because a lot of the leadership we talk about today is effectively trying to manage the status quo, you know, the next quarterly results, and, you know, shore up performance, shore up the walls of the stronghold, or look after the next 3 years of their CEO tenure. It's different when you start to look at it in the context of the journey and the kind of pioneering style of leadership that we now need.
Yeah, it's quite an interesting kind of contrast to a few years ago. I remember speaking to a lot of sustainability professionals and businesses that kind of wanted that kind of investor push almost, and these kind of converging regulations to really help drive them. But it feels like there's almost too much noise now. And I'd love to kind of get a bit of insight into your organization and the work that you guys are doing to ensure that sustainability is embedded across the organization and with ownership from yourself, obviously, to, I suppose, like you said, get yourself into that transition zone.
Yeah. So, I mean, in many respects, the Amphesis business was, was formed out of a place of frustration, where myself and various other sort of co-founders, we were frustrated about all the talk about sustainability and not enough action. And where there was action, there was a very high failure rate. And we started to look into why that was. There's more research around now, to be honest, but then it was a bit more anecdotal just by being practitioners in the field. And a couple of key things that we found was that, that every sort of area of specialism thought they were the most important area of specialism and were operating in silos. So carbon isolation of water and waste and biodiversity and social and so on. The reality is that they're all interdependent. And sustainability is delivered successfully by looking at things in a much more interoperable and holistic way. And so it was important for us to be able to bring in all these specialisms into the same place. So that they could really start to work together and understand their dependency. And then that gives us your sort of base, if you like, because we want to root everything in the science. And it needs to stand up to necessary scrutiny, whatever we do. But then you recognize that actually you also need, it's like a T-shaped organization. So you need that sort of scientific depth, but you need the breadth to be able to then engage with some of those influential people who are making those key decisions where we can deliver maximum impact. And that's typically called the C-suite. So we needed those people who had the sort of the EQ and the solutionists of this world and people who really know how to join up the piece of the jigsaw to be able to deliver whatever is the picture on the lid of the jigsaw. So there's a lot in Anthesis which is sort of designed, if you like, for impact. This is why we exist. But then of course, you know, we do need to walk the talk. So, you know, we're a B Corp. We have to look at how, and so we ask ourselves the same question as everybody else has to ask themselves at the time of a crisis. How are you deploying the resources and the assets that are available to you to be able to deliver maximum impact? Typically, we do that through our projects. And then we are implementing, for example, something we call the Anthesis Impact Compass, which allows us to be able to evaluate the impact that we're making through the projects that we are delivering. But that's not an answer that's not good enough in itself to be able to say, hey, everything we do, because we're a specialist in this, you know, we've got 1300 specialists, you know, supporting many of the world's biggest clients. You know, so therefore we are delivering an impact, but it's not good enough because we have to continue to look at what we're doing as an organization and the mindset that exists within what is a very purpose-driven company. So, you know, we've signed up for SBTI, we have our own climate goals, and we want to be able to demonstrate to those people that we are out there guiding, you know, through the transition, guiding rather than being sort of transactional consultants. There is a difference guiding through this transition that, you know, we're doing the same for our own organization.
I really want to touch point on that kind of mindset that you focus on, because I think it's been kind of, we've seen kind of CSR evolve from this like very early stage, like I said, nice to have, maybe kind of a little bit kind of a fuzzy topic, to really kind of based in science with the kind of emergence of the SBTI and science-based targets, a lot of kind of technical translations of essentially taking data and forging roadmaps and also translating the kind of latest scientific warnings into action. We've got kind of people doing degrees in this kind of stuff now, whether it's kind of carbon compliance, energy management, all the way down to kind of sustainability and ESG. Very technical sphere with a lot of kind of jargon, but I really wanted to get a view on how you as a chief executive are viewing kind of the more people focused skills, I suppose softer skills for a lack of kind of a better term, and how important that is to kind of driving sustainability across an organization and making sure that everyone understands those kind of macro trends and realizes the role they have to play. So is that something that you and your organization are really looking at, the kind of the more people focused skills to take those solutionists and get them to understand everything?
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, I've been in this world for 30 years, so I've kind of been observing. And I have to say that I think that I used to think that the science is where the truth is, and therefore the truth will prevail. But I've moved now, I think, to a place where, you know, the science gives us robustness. So we need that, but it won't necessarily prevail because the I've observed that that organizations find it all too easy to create fantasy zones through greenwashing and climate denial. And if you're able to narrate those stories more effectively than those people trying to narrate the truth, then you can move whole populations into those zones. And once they're in that place, controlled by your narrative, which might be fantasy, but never is your narrative, then that gives you power and control. So I think that what we have to do is we need to make sure that we have a great storytellers and, great strategists, great creative designers, great people can really engage with the audience at the right level, which might be a human level, might be an emotional level, might be a spiritual level, might be there's all sorts of different connection points. Through which we need to channel the truth that comes from the science. So I see that in the market, and I also see that in our thesis. And so the sort of, you know, the corporate culture and the way we organize ourselves and the way we look at what we call our anthesis spirit, needs to be at the heart of the way we run the organization. So let me put it in context. So if you are going to be true to mission and you want to maximize the impact that you can make in the world through your clients, then you have to see your resources. So let's talk about our people as opportunities that need to be unleashed. They need to be released to be able to deliver maximum impact in the context within which they find themselves. Right? Most organizations that are of a certain scale start to look at their resources as risks because they can't control them, that need to be managed. And then they put them in boxes. And as soon as you do that, then you are minimizing or reducing the impact that those resources can make. Now, in the context of crisis, and in the context of the mission that we have, for example, in our thesis, that's unacceptable. So I hope that just gives one example, and there are many others as well, one example as to how you have to connect your corporate culture and the values of the organization, the mindset, with the mission.
No, I think that makes perfect sense. I think that's an area that a lot of our audience, the sustainability, is probably still grappling with. They might feel like they're still in that silo or not quite kind of embedded what they're doing into the wider purpose. So I think that's some great insight there. And should we touched earlier about the kind of increased investor focus, this kind of rise in different kind of standards and frameworks, all designed to obviously help sustainability movement, but in the kind of short term, I feel like there's some teething issues and some pains to get through to kind of standardize it all and make it easier for the kind of business journey to utilize that. I'm talking kind of the CSRD in Europe and the transition halfway task force in the UK and their recommendations on top of TCFD, TNFD, this kind of alphabet soup that a lot of businesses are probably kind of wading through right now. And I think we're seeing some research come out that many businesses, many of those probably starting out on their journey more so than that have already mentioned about it, feel like they're in this kind of analysis paralysis where they're not sure what steps to do, whether it's kind of aiming too big and worrying about greenwashing or not doing enough and worrying about kind of green stalling or hushing. What advice do you have for those that are perhaps focusing on the perfect solution rather than the progress journey? How would you advise that they kind of overcome all of these kind of external frameworks that are meant to be enabling but maybe aren't right now?
We see this all the time, that organizations are paralyzed in charge of all these drivers, some self-imposed regulation and some governmental. So we understand the challenge and organizations need to be able to navigate the compliance part of the journey, and they need to be able to navigate that well. And in parallel with that, they need to find opportunities for value creation. Especially we see organizations on three journeys to be able to meet the kind of targets they're looking at. One is the navigation of compliance journey. And, you know, in terms of what we see come down the pipe, we think that's going to become even more challenging. And for the reasons we talked about earlier on, in terms of this is the big stick. This is, you know, this is what gets people out of their perceived places of safety into the journey. And then they need to accelerate organizations in that journey through bringing more regulation. So I think this is probably just the start. And so organizations need to try to get ahead of that, rather than, you know, where much of the world is at the moment, which is kind of chasing their tail, trying to deliver compliance for minimum cost and having a very short runway, to be able to meet those kind of standards. The second journey is one of resource efficiency. And there's a lot of companies actually enjoying that journey at the moment because of the cost of inputs and the return on investment tends to be very attractive. But that journey will result in the law of diminishing returns. And neither the compliance journey or that journey will get to the kind of targets that are being set around, for example, net zero. So then the third journey is one which is the most challenging, which is where organizations have really got to change their business models. And that's quite disruptive. So, you know, the one that's talked about most frequently is how do we move from a linear business model to a circular business model? And that requires, you know, a lot of investment up front before you start to get the returns. And that's where we're going to see most of the disruption, most of the embracing of technology and so on and so forth. But so, you know, there's a lot for organizations to grapple. But in that, there's also a great opportunity for value creation, because in that, that's where organizations are going to learn how to take more market share. They're going to find operational efficiencies. They're going to find more resilient supply chains. They're going to see, brand enhancement and reputational strength and so on. So I think it's really important that organizations see this as not just more regulation, where they've got to tick some boxes and cut a check and go back to business as usual. They've got to see this as at the start of a journey that is now inevitable. And if they've got to step into that journey, into this transition zone, then they need to be able to find sources of value creation in parallel with the compliance drivers.
I think that's a kind of great kind of call to action to finish on for our listeners today, Stuart. So thank you very much for that. I'm wary of taking too much of your time for this call, but I think you've kind of offered some great insights today. So thank you so much for your time with us today, Stuart.
Pleasure. Good to be here.
And obviously, thank you for all of those who have been listening into our Susty Talks. And for any of the finalists that are perhaps listening to this interview as well, good luck in the awards if I don't get to speak to you beforehand as well. But that is all we have time for this episode of Susty Talks. So again, a thank you to Stuart and Thetis, who of course are a platinum partner our ED 2024 awards. We will be back throughout Business Leadership Month with more Susty Talks, digging into those big kind of challenging topics which we touched upon today. So we hope to be giving you our audience more insight soon. So hopefully you'll be hearing from the ED team again soon. But for this Susty Talk, that's it. Thank you and goodbye.